Welcome to the Eco News Report. I'm your host this week, Tom Wheeler, Executive Director of Epic. And I am joined by my co-host and colleague and friend, Jen Kalt, Director of Humble Baykeeper. Hey, Jen.
Hey, Tom.
All right. So we have a fun show today. We have a lot of guests. Let's start with Lori Richman, a professor at Humboldt State University. Hey, Lori.
Hi, everyone.
And from the Wiad Tribe, we have Adam Cantor. Hey, Adam.
Oh, hello out there in radio land.
Cheryl Seidner, cultural liaison with the Wiad Tribe. Hey, Cheryl.
Hello.
And Helena Wilkinson. Hey, Helena.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
All right. So we are talking about restoring the Wiat's tribal sovereignty over more and more areas of their ancestral territory and an exciting new acquisition for the Wiat tribe. So Cheryl, could you tell us about the Wiat tribe's ancestral territory? So before European colonization of the North Coast, what were Wiat lands roughly?
Well, what I have been told from my family, so it's not the constitution per se for the Wiat tribe, but as I was told growing up, is that our territory was from the Little River to Bear River, from the ocean side out as far as we can see, all the way into the mountains. That's what was our ancestral territory. That's what my dad told me. I must have been only 6 or 8 years old at that time, but that's what he did. And my dad never made great grandiose ideas. He was very, I wouldn't say methodical, but he knew what he was talking about, and he didn't fabricate or over-glorify anything. He gave it back just like they were. I tested him.
So I think that this is kind of roughly the area that we now might call Humboldt Bay today. So the Wiat ancestral territory was this large area that Keita today, where we're recording the show, so we would be here in Wiat ancestral territory. I live in Eureka, again, also Wiat ancestral territory. And of course, there is a tragic history, though, of the land being taken from the Wiat tribe. Cheryl, again, if you have any thoughts on that, because I think that kind of sets the stage for why land return projects are so exciting.
They are very exciting, just like the return of most of Tulawat. I grew up calling it Indian Island, but I was told when I was very young, about 6, 7 years old, maybe even younger, what had happened on the island. And so I'd known ever since I was just a little tyke that what had happened. And Mama told me that what happened back then was a sad and horrific action, but we live here now. We all live together. That's what happened in the past. We need to leave it in the past and go forward. And that's what my grandfather probably instilled in her, because unfortunately, sadly, along with that massacre, they took away our dreamers, which were the children, the young people, and our elders, which were the ones who would bring forth what our culture was like. And so there were no more dances left, no one to tell us about those things. And so now we are grabbing and on any thoughts and dreams and ideas of what life may have been like 200 years ago. And so Helena's there, as you see, she's working. She was our second dance for coming of age. Our first dance was with Michelle, who, is there anything like this? And she was 14. And I said, well, yes, there is a coming of age ceremony. So it was Michelle, 14-year-old Michelle, said, well, I think I want one. And so we started out with that, recovering some of our cultural perspectives and recovering some of our land. In the United States, we can all go to our state capital or state capitals and to the nation's capital without permission. With the island, we were not allowed on the island because it was privately owned, especially where the massacre took place, and the city of Eureka owned a majority of it. So when you kill people, that legacy stops with that murder. And if we don't talk about it, people will forget about it. And you look at our nation right now in the turmoil it is. People hadn't heard of Rosewood, hadn't heard about all these African-American and Japanese and Chinese expulsion and things like that. It is really sad that our America doesn't remember or want to recall those ugly things. So that's been my thing, is that I want you to remember. I don't want to make you feel guilty. That's not my quest. My quest is I want you to know what happened here in Humboldt County. And I want you to realize that we got to move forward. We're in a new millennium. And so we need to move forward. We need to, but we need to remember and not forget the atrocities that have happened in our history, locally and nationally and worldwide.
Absolutely. And so a couple of times here, we've mentioned Tolowat and the returning of Tolowat Island to the Wiat tribe. So this occurred back in 2019. The city of Eureka transferred the lands that it had in ownership back to the Wiat people. So it was a very exciting event. And I think perhaps that is a nice place to get to where we are today, which we have a new land back project for the Wiat tribe. Adam, do you want to talk a little bit about this part of the world? Tell us about this part of the world that the Wiat tribe is getting back, then we can get into the nuts and bolts of how it was accomplished.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Well, this is a really exciting land back project. The place is called Marashawak, or Wolf's House in Wiat, a place we now call King Salmon. You know, the legacy of settler colonialism and land theft and genocide has left the Wiat with less than 1% of their ancestral, their great ancestral lands that we were talking about earlier. So the return of Tolowat was a huge step. A few years back, a Health and Human Services survey to tribal citizens revealed that one of the biggest needs and one of the biggest reasons tribal people weren't eating traditional foods or practicing subsistence activities was the lack of ancestral lands or property to be able to practice these cultural activities. This return of Marashawak represents the first repatriation of ancestral forest lands to the Wiat tribe here in the heart of the Redwood Nation. The first return of forest lands to the tribe, which is really exciting, 46-acre parcel that's just a gem of green space. You know, one of the last sort of larger, undeveloped, private pieces of land right on the fringe of Humboldt Bay, surrounded by the residential development of Humboldt Hill, almost 14 acres of freshwater, wetlands, and lowlands, and then and a beautiful Sitka spruce forest and some northern coastal scrublands with just an array of culturally important plant species that up until now, the tribe didn't have access to on their own lands or their own properties, but could only really access through permits and co-management agreements and trespassing, the classic way of getting huckleberries.
All right. So we're talking about an area just outside of Fields Landing that was private forest land that is now going back to the Wiat tribe. Sitka Spruce Forest. So you raised the kind of intimate connection that the Wiat tribe have with the land and the use of the land for food stuff, other cultural resources. What about this area is so special to the Wiat? What in particular is the Wiat tribe excited about to have this land back in its possession?
Anytime we get our land back, whether it's an acre or 60 or 100 acres, it's always exciting to me. I can't speak for the full Wiat tribe, but it's exciting to me because we were always trespassing. Anytime we wanted to do anything, it was trespassing. When we went hazelnut gathering or huckleberrying, we always had to hop a fence. Trying to see my grandmother in a dress hop a fence is really interesting. And we would go up on the hill and we would collect hazelnuts. We would collect salmon berries, huckleberries. We never had a watch, but Lolita Fire Whistle would blow at noontime and Grandma would say, okay, come sit down. We're going to have lunch. So we'd have dried eel, Indian bread, and some fresh fruit. It was always good. And I never thought we were trespassing. I never thought we were doing anything illegal because that's what we always did. And then when I got older, I got a little more afraid because people might come out with a gun or a shotgun or something and shoot us with rock salt or something. And so I was more cautious when I was an adult, but as a kid, hey, this is what we did. So having land of our own to go gather things is really important to me, and it's a good thing.
So this is a forest land. How do you anticipate this area will be managed?
Unfortunately, part of the property was logged in 2014, apparently when spruce was at the bottom of the market. So I don't even know if they broke even on the timber sale. But often happens after industrial logging, when you have a lot of soil disturbance, you see invasive species come in. And so that's one of the issues we want to kind of address early on is starting getting out there with tribal folks and volunteer crews and start removing some of the scotch broom and pampas grass and English ivy that's established in some of the former logged areas and in the forest understory. But historically, what we've heard from tribal citizens is that the wetlands on this property have always been very rich and used to host more open water. So we're really excited about conducting a future hydrologic assessment, which is part of our grant project, to look at watershed restoration opportunities. It's pretty exciting. There's a class two spring on the property and a couple small drainages. They're sort of isolated by themselves. They're kind of not really part of the Elk River watershed, but really their own watersheds on the fringe of Humboldt Bay. So we're really excited about those opportunities and the ecocultural restoration opportunities, really focusing on where are the best berry patches, where are the areas that we can really enhance cultural species that are already there and help them to flourish.
So let's talk about how we got this land back, which is terribly exciting. And for that, I'm going to bring in Lori Richmond and Jen Cault. But Adam, perhaps you can kind of speak to the partnership first that was created and the work between multiple different institutions and agencies to make this happen.
Certainly. Well, super exciting partnership. And this property was first identified through a Bureau of Indian Affairs ethnobotanical mapping project. And a few years back, Dr. Lori Richmond invited a tribe to be a part of the newly established HSU Sea Level Rise Initiative, which was really exciting for us. The tribe hadn't really gotten into sea level rise adaptation planning or really climate adaptation planning. And so this kind of opened the door for us. It was really exciting to be a part of groups of academics at HSU that were really looking at sea level rise and the predicted impacts related to that. And not long afterwards, we collaborated on a grant proposal with the Tribal Climate Resilience Program through the Bureau of Indian Affairs that allowed us to really build the tribe's capacity to start planning for sea level rise and climate change. That kind of led to another grant through the OPC Coastal Resilience Program. And a little over a year, or almost 2 years back, the Ocean Protection Council announced a new environmental justice grant program. And I had just been kind of looking around this area at King Salmon and saw that this parcel that we had identified in this ethnobotany survey back in 2015 was actually for sale. And I was like, well, maybe it could be a land back project. And we started talking about it. And yeah, things kind of moved from there. Maybe I'll pass it over to Lori to talk more about.
Yeah, Lori, I'd be curious to hear how you incorporated this idea of land back into your sea level rise initiative. Or actually, let's first set the table. What is your sea level rise initiative?
Well, we're now an institute. The Cal Poly Humboldt Sea Level Rise Institute just envisions a diverse network of collaborators working together across knowledges, disciplines, sectors to develop research and planning related to sea level rise. And we've really expressly viewed it as a partnership between the university and the wider community and tribes. So we have a structure of co-chairs, and one of those chairs is from the institution and one is from outside of it. And Adam Cantor is co-chair with me at the moment. I think a big part of what we wanted to do was just kind of advance. We were actually approached by Alderon Laird, who was about to retire, and he had done a lot of the sea level rise research and planning around the bay, and he wanted to create an institutional home that work could continue.
The Eco News Report, and we're talking about the acquisition of a 46-acre coastal property that is culturally and ecologically significant to the Wiat tribe.
And so the idea is to just advance the conversation and research, but we really wanted to model a version of academia where we kind of listened to what the community needs were and developed projects and proposals for that with the right mix of people. And so we have government representatives, tribal representatives, NGOs, those from private consulting firms, and they each have the best of what they can do at the table. They can bring various skills. And that's kind of what happened around this project idea, that we saw the proposal. Adam proposed this idea and we're like, yeah, we'll support you to do that. And it was an exciting opportunity. I think what was so exciting is like that it was a tribe, academic institution, environmental NGOs. Jen Kaltz here from Humboldt Baykeeper, Friends of the Dunes provided a lot of support as well. And the state as the funding partner. Yeah, so we just moved ahead to provide a supporting role in developing the proposal. And the exciting thing is from HSU's standpoint is that there is some funding for student involvement in the next phase now that the land's been acquired is for the tribe to develop an eco-cultural restoration plan. And HSU students from the Native American Studies Department, my department, Environmental Science and Management, the Indian Natural Resource Science and Engineering Program can all help with some of the water quality monitoring, restoration planning, cultural planning in a supporting way. I do need to shout out a couple of supporters. Humboldt Area Foundation provided a bit of funding along with HSU Sponsor Programs Foundation to help with the appraisal process. There's a lot of steps that have to be done pretty quickly. We also got some support from California Department of Fish and Wildlife. Mike Van Hattem was really amazing. Humboldt County, City of Eureka, Pacific Birds Habitat Joint Venture, and Pacific Watershed Associates. So just it gives you a sense of this like whole kind of community supporting this effort.
So Jen, I want to bring you in as Humboldt Baykeeper to talk about why Humboldt Baykeeper is excited about this and the idea of kind of incorporating land back as part of one of the many tools that we have as environmental organizations to protect our environment.
Well, thanks, Tom. I suppose the most exciting part of all is finding a way to work together to get this land back in the Wiat tribe's hands. They're the original stewards of the land, and lots of studies have been done showing how important tribal stewardship and tribal ecological knowledge is for protecting biodiversity. And this place is really unique and could have been developed a long time ago, but wasn't because various issues on the property kept it from being developed, like the wetlands. California Department of Fish and Wildlife identified part of the Sitka spruce forest as an egret and heron roost area and may even be a rookery where they can be nesting and breeding. The California Coastal Commission had issues with developing the area because of the lack of road access and so on. And so it's just really exciting to have the Sitka spruce stand so close to Humboldt Bay. The coastal wetlands there that are freshwater wetlands now, they may have been tidal wetlands before the freeway was built. They're just on the inland side of the freeway. That's why it's super exciting, just to be able to think about this long, tragic history and what has been visited on the Wiat tribe over the last century and a half, and that this is not the end of the story, that we're continuing the story for future generations, but also with a lot of excitement and interest from tribal members to restore that property. And Humboldt Baykeeper's role will have, Adam and I are both botanists, and so we're going to do some botanical inventories of the property, and I look forward to that. Also, there's some, like Adam spoke about the springs and the stream that's on the site. We're going to be working with Pacific Watershed Associates and others to just kind of look at the water quality and see what we can do to prevent any kind of further impacts or restore those waters on the site.
And if folks are interested in a longer discussion about the intersection between the land back movement and modern environmentalism. We have a whole show on this subject from a couple weeks back, and I'll put it in the show notes, which you can find on the LostCoastOutpost.com. I think that this is a really positive direction that the environmental movement is moving towards. I think historically there has been skepticism from older environmentalists, from older generations of environmentalism about returning land to a tribal sovereign nation, because then it is not public in some sense. But I think that this idea of land back is one that we should, as an environmental movement, wholly adopt and work with our tribal partners to push forward. Because as we've said so many times in this own show, the land seems to do best when it is returned to the caretakers who have been living in harmony with that land for time immemorial. So let's continue to work together on things like these. Speaking of continuing to work together and building out a broader vision of land back in Humboldt Bay, let's get back to our friends from the Wiat tribe. This is one project. There are other land back projects currently in the works. What else is going on at the Wiat tribe today to regain sovereign control over your ancestral territory?
Lots of exciting stuff. And bringing this back to the sea level rise nexus, Helena Wilkinson, natural resources technician and citizen, did a lot of work, you know, asking tribal citizens about their concerns. And it wasn't so much that cultural sites are going to be inundated, low-lying sites like Tulawat and others that might be inundated. It was really the loss of culturally important habitats and access to these habitats that came out as one of the most important things and conserving upland habitats. So we have examples of Tulawat, and a lot of times the tribe is offered these low-lying areas on Humboldt Bay. And this project, because it does have low-lying areas that will be impacted by sea level rise, but also upland areas, is kind of a great opportunity for the tribe to really contribute to nature-based solutions by stewarding this property to allow for the migration of sea level rise and habitats inland by allowing that space. But currently we have a couple other projects. We've been working with Friends of the Dunes to work on the repatriation of a site known as Digiwetuk, kind of in the central part of Humboldt Bay that was an important ceremonial site. And we're also working with BLM and CDFW to get a small strip of land back on Table Bluff that actually blocks the tribe's access to the South Wiggy or South Bay.
Yeah. I'm working on that ever since we became federally recognized again, so back in the 90s.
Yeah, that was a kind of a sneaky thing. We don't know if it was on purpose, but when the tribe acquired the new Table Bluff Reservation, which is 88 acres on Table Bluff, for years, folks just thought that the res went all the way to the bay shore. And then it was some years that someone actually looked at the parcel layers and like, what is this? There's this really skinny sliver that's separating us from the bay. And there's actually kind of a similar example on Tulawat, where City of Eureka withheld these parcels that actually go out into the mudflats and kind of border South Tulawat and up for all. Some folks think it might be because of interests in making money off mariculture in these areas. But those are just some of the projects. And, you know, really thinking about the diversity of habitats in Wiat ancestral territory and slowly trying to reclaim examples of each one of these habitats: redwood forest, coastal scrub, coastal prairie, wetlands, mixed conifer forest, I think are all big goals of the Wiat.
Yeah, my brother used to go hunting down on the, well, it'll be here down towards the mouth of the river. He and his good friend used to go and take their little guns, and they would live off the land and not try to starve to death because they were just young guys, 14, 16 years old. And they would trap rabbit and get birds and ducks and things like that. And that's what they did as young boys, working into being young men. And my brother was one of those people who, when he went fishing, he always brought back his elders' food. When he went deer hunting, he always brought back food for the elders. And he never asked for a payment. They were always happy to see my brother coming because they knew that he was going to bring them something. And my great aunt Martha, who lived up in and around Ronerville, Fortuna, my mother came in. I was with my mom that day, and we came to visit my great aunt. And she says, "Oh, Loretta, you brought me rabbit." And sure enough, that's what my mom had in the bag, was a rabbit my brother had killed. And he sent it up to our great aunt. My mother and her aunt were very in tune to one another. One would call and say, "I knew it was you." And she would, when she would answer, say, "Loretta," which was my mom's name. And my great aunt would call my mom, and mom would say, "Aunt Martha." And so they knew when it was. I always found that very, very interesting. And I think part of that is that we want that land back because that's a part of our soul. I know that sounds funny to everyone else, possibly, but land is the heartbeat of our soul. We dance on it to make the world right. We dance on it to make young women, young girls to be young women. We dance on it for the young boys to be young men and to learn how to take care of things. And you got to remember, you didn't want to talk too much about the massacre on the island, but those things don't get passed down if our elders are gone. And so now we're relearning and reteaching ourselves. And with this land return, how exciting is that we can go out and walk and take our feet and put our toes in that soil and say, "I know I'm going to learn how to take care of it." And so that's why these women here who are talking, we appreciate them. We appreciate Adam. And I think of my grandniece, Helena, who is a young woman, and she has been partly raised by her grandmother, my sister, who has taught her a lot. And she has that young idea of what we should do and go forward. So I would like to hear what she has to say, because she always astounds me. She's such an amazing young person.
Helena, if you are able to chime in.
Yeah, kind of similar to what my Aunt Cheryl was saying, is that getting land back isn't just about like owning the property that we used to have, but being able to go out to the land and just being able to just listen to the animals and feel the nature and watch the plants grow, as I used to do when I was little in the garden. And it is just like a space to heal and just take a step back from the day-to-day lives that we have now and just the stress that is going on in the world. I'm really excited about getting any properties back because I've got these ideas for like Marashawak and having like youth camps and being able to take out elders, or like Tuguk Eaton, Jacoby Creek Forest, that has really easy access so that we could bring elders out, gather again lands that they never were able to in their whole lives, probably, because they weren't allowed to go out in those areas. Some main topics I got when I was interviewing for sea level rise and the loss of land is that, like what Adam was saying, it's not just the loss of the land, but the areas that we get to go to gather, to recreate, and to just be out there. That's where I like to go to just decompress and take the animals out, and great memories of like going out and gathering with my grandma or my Aunt Cheryl. And like, we'd have tsunami warnings down here on the coast. So you know what we would do? Leave school and go up Trinity and gather in the pouring rain on the river, getting willow and going to get tea on the side of the road.
Yeah.
And we just would make do however we could, wherever we could get to.
Well, it's very special. I'm so excited for the Wiat tribe to have this land back, and I'm excited to help in the future on other similar projects. So Helena Wilkinson, Cheryl Seidner, Adam Cantor, thank you so much for joining the Eco News Report. Also, Lori Richmond, to thank you as well for joining us on this episode.
Thanks for having us. Thank you, Tom.
All right. You can listen to more Eco News next week on this time and channel. It's time to take a quick break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. And we are back to the Eco News Report, and we're talking about the acquisition of a 46-acre coastal property that is culturally and ecologically significant to the Wiat tribe.